joined us here in studio. You texted me yesterday.
Yes, I did.
Late yesterday afternoon, and you asked if you could come on today because you had some information to share. Tell us exactly why you wanted to come on today.
You know, Sandy, I wanted to come on because I want the people out there to get credible sources for this information on this virus. You know, so many people will tune in on television or radio to get their information, which is okay. But, you know, the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, that's what this was developed for. On the website, they have the latest information that's a little bit more accurate. I want to explain a couple psychological phenomenons that occur when major events like this happen. And one of those is called groupthink mentality. And it was pioneered by a researcher named Irving Janis from Yale University back in 1972. And groupthink mentality means that people search for harmony and congruity in their ideas and belief systems. And so if somebody says to them, hey, we have this pandemic, we have this issue with this virus, and that fits your belief system, then they will agree with it automatically. They won't have any analysis or any critical thinking about it. And I noticed, Sandy, a lot of people in my practice were not coming into the office, and they said, can we do FaceTime instead? And that's fine, because I do that a lot of times with my distance performance people. But I noticed that people, I would ask them what their concern was, because in our office at any given time, we may have 6 to 8 people at the most. And I told them that, you know, there really wasn't much of a risk to come in and see us face to face. So I just thought that it would be really important that people understand they need to be judicious. No doubt. I understand that. But at the same time, go to the right sources. I don't think necessarily the president of the United States, he's regurgitating information that he's getting from some of his experts, but even some of his experts have a political bent, and I want people to understand that. The CDC is more objective information,
yes,
and they can look that up and find the information there. The second thing I want to talk about is what we call confirmation bias. And confirmation bias means if I hear an opinion that fits with my belief system,
yeah,
then I'm biased. I want to latch onto it and agree with it right away. And I have noticed so many people are self-quarantined, staying at home. They don't even believe that they can walk outside. So I want people to understand, be a little more analytical, be a little more judicious. And then later on, Sandy, I can talk about some tips to combat stress and anxiety, because not a lot of people are not a lot of people are talking about the psychological, you know, outfall of what's going to happen, because just holing up in your house or your office or wherever you are has psychological and emotional ramifications.
Doc, I want you to get into that a little bit, because, you know, for me, I'll tell you this, my wife is pregnant right now, and we've heard that on the news, and we've heard with watching TV that we shouldn't be outside as much, and we should try to keep it small, and I have a son that's getting ready to be 2 next week, and
right.
So we've been isolating ourselves, and my wife is one of those people that are going through it, is feeling really anxious, wants to get out of the house, is a little bit mad about this whole situation. So I want you to get into those tips that,
yeah,
that you're talking about.
Well, you know, Orlando, you bring up something really important, is that when we feel anxiety, whether it's to cabin fever, we're locked up inside, there's a reaction in the brain. The brain, you know, the pituitary gland releases cortisol, the pituitary gland releases adrenaline, and activates us into what we call the sympathetic side of the nervous system. And when it does that, it triggers, you know, narrowing of thought, muscle tension, anxiety. And so what's interesting to me about this, that by recommending people to self-quarantine, for example, to stay inside, we're actually causing a train of reaction that has psychological implications that will raise anxiety. And so in an effort to minimize anxiety, I would recommend to people that they can go outdoors. They can go for a walk. They can go,
absolutely,
to the park. You know, Sandy,
that
we were talking earlier about, you know, going to the park and exercising. Some,
yes,
some trainers are recommending to meet their clients at the park,
right,
and get some exercise, because here's what happens. When the brain perceives a threat, and a threat can be anything from a real threat like someone breaking into your home, or it can be a perceived threat. Like, man, I've been holed up in this house for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. That pituitary gland will automatically release adrenaline. And when adrenaline is released, it puts us into that anxious side of our nervous system. And I want people to realize they really need to regulate anxiety through exercise, through different tips that I'll give out in a little bit.
And we look forward to those tips, but we do see anxiety all around. I mean, I'm at the grocery store yesterday. Shelves are emptying rapidly.
Right.
Particularly for various items. And yes, I like the word you used, judicious, but there seems to be perhaps a slightly higher level of anxiety than there needs to be. And listen, I believe a little bit of overreaction is better than a lot of underreaction. But still, if you want to see anxiety, go to any supermarket in the area right now.
Right. You know, there's a real practical example of that. A friend of mine told me she was at Costco and she nearly got into a fist fight with another lady battling over product. And I think with those elevated levels of cortisol that's being released in the brain, with the elevated levels of adrenaline that are being released, we're not our normal selves. So we have to understand that. And there are specific things that we can do, Sandy, to regulate ourselves. And one of those is to be a little more analytical. Instead of just jumping on this groupthink mentality and searching for harmony, searching for congruence, look for the facts. Look for what's coming out with the Center for Disease Control. That's one of their jobs. Let's put them to the test. That's one of their jobs to educate the public in a situation like this. Because let's be honest, Sandy, this is unprecedented in my lifetime, and people are having to make adjustments that they never had before. You know, I wanted to take my sons down to Arizona for spring break, and I'm having to make decisions I've never had to make before. But I can tell you this, I'm trying my very best to live my life as normal as possible, because I do not want to trigger those centers of the brain that are going to release more chemicals that are going to make me feel more anxious, like the cortisol and the adrenaline that's going to activate that anxious side of my nervous system.
You know, for me, I've struggled with how do I explain what's going on to a younger child?
Yes.
You know, because my son's used to going outside every day. You know,
right.
He takes a nap in the middle of the day, get him out in the morning, get him out after that nap. So could you talk to our listeners and just how do you explain to your kids, or how do you go about this where they're wondering, well, why are we not going on play dates? Why are we not going to this place? Why are we not in the car? Why are we not going to different places?
Right. So basically from birth to 11 or 12 years old, people are operating what's called concrete operational thinking. In other words, they're very linear thinking. They think that everything is as they see it. Dad's dad, mom is mom. When we reach 11 or 12, we move into formal operational thinking, which is called abstract thinking, or metacognition, which means we can think about thinking. So if your children are below the age of 11 or 12, then they're very linear thinkers. And just basically tell them, you know, hey, we have to stay inside because there's a disease that's out there in the world that could be perceived as dangerous, but it's really not. We're going to go outside. We can exercise outside. You can't go on play dates because it could be contagious.
Sure.
It's very concrete, very straightforward to them. Kids post 11 years old, they're more formal thinkers. You can explain more in detail what the perceived threats are. And you can actually encourage them to go on the website of the CDC and read up for themselves, too, that they get accurate information. But I think what I want people to understand is this is not the time to panic. This is not the time to just react and listen to, you know, the local news station or the national news station only. Look for some more credible sources that has information on this. Because if you break down the numbers, Sandy, in Orlando, if you break down the statistics of how many people have been infected versus how many people have died, it's a very low rate. It's a very low rate. And I want people to understand that there is a threat. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say there's not a threat. There is. But I want people to be very judicious, very analytical in their decision making going forward, because I have heard some people who have high levels of education, Sandy, reacting very automatically, that groupthink mentality, that confirmation bias, that somebody just confirmed what I think anyway, so I'm going to go with it. And I want people to be more analytical than that.
How's the sports world handling all this?
It's a great question. Yeah. You know, I've talked to a couple of my clients that literally have been affected. A couple of my clients in the NBA, obviously, with the shutdown right there right now. You know, I think people in Orlando, you can speak to this. A lot of these professional athletes, that's their safe place. That's their home. When they're out on the field, when they're out on the court, when they're in the pool, whatever they do, that's their safe place. And with this being taken away, like right in the middle of the season, for example, in the NBA, it provides anxiety for these guys. And I know one local NBA player who's really reached out to me the last few days and says, Doc, I don't know what to do with myself. What can I do with myself? And that's why I brought along some tips. But maybe, Orlando, you can speak to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, with anything, you get into a routine, right? And some of us, I know for me, when I played football, I started playing football at 7 years old.
Right.
I retired at 30. You know, that's 23 years of my life. I already get up, go work out in the off season. Hey, after a month of that, we got to get on the field and start, you know, running out on the field and start getting after it and ramping it up. So that was always my thought process. And I struggled with that too when I retired. You know, that every player is going to go through that transition. It's not going to be as severe as it is right now. But when you do retire, you got to figure out what do you do with the time of day, because there's so much more free time, right? So I completely understand it. But Doc, I want to ask you about we saw some blockbuster deals yesterday in the NFL, mm-hmm. and one that came in late last night was Stephon Diggs going to the Buffalo Bills. And you look at Minnesota, and it's a great trade. I mean, the value and all the picks that they were able to get from him. But how do you think that would work out with now this young, talented wide receiver going to a team now with a guy in Josh Allen that's a young quarterback that hasn't had the success and hasn't proven that he could throw the ball as well as these other quarterbacks, where, you know, with Stephon Diggs, it seemed like he was complaining week in, week out there in Minnesota when you did have a quarterback that's played a ton of football.
Yeah. You know, Stephon Diggs is a great player. I mean, I noticed him several years back. He stands out. He's, you know, he's got the size, but he's got that moxie about him. You know, he gets out on the field and he's a difference maker. But I think that's a great deal for Buffalo because, you know, the quarterback up there, Josh, he's a great player. I mean, I believe he's going to be very productive coming forward. But I think, you know, so much of what I talk about, Orlando, is the mental side. And for me, you know, Diggs has proved he can play physiologically. His challenge is going to be, can he regulate himself to fit in and be cohesive with that team? As you guys know, we've talked about cohesiveness a lot. Task and social. Task is doing your job. Social is getting along. I think he has yet to prove that he can get along with a team on a high level of social cohesion, and that's going to be the key for him to adapt there in Buffalo.
When we talked yesterday so much about the collective bargaining agreement and all players, well, I guess 400 didn't vote. Maybe you have some theories as to why amid this crisis that we're in right now, why people didn't vote. But the people who did passed the new CBA by all of 60 votes. Brandon McManus told our friend Nikki Jabala from The Athletic that he had reservations about it. And presumably his teammates did as well. What happened, in your view, with that CBA vote? And again, speaking to some of the subjects you've already addressed, do you think what is going on around us affected that vote and made perhaps players more anxious to vote yes and get at least certainty through 2030?
I definitely think it's affected the vote. There's no doubt about it. You know, emotionally, psychologically, right now, Sandy and Orlando, we're in a state we haven't been in. I mean, we're in a state of mind that we haven't been in, really, like I said, in my lifetime. So I think it definitely affected the vote. I definitely think it affected the players' perception of what direction they should go. And I think for the more analytical players, you know, for some of the players, they were able to vote because they were able to kind of separate the anxiety from their analysis, and they voted. But for a lot of players, again, you know, a lot of players are guided so much by their agent now, and their agent will recommend to them, no, let's not do this right now. It's not a period that we should be voting on because there's a lot of things going on right now. So I think the period of time, Sandy, and the perceived level of pandemic, the perceived level of anxiety has definitely impacted that. And I think that's why most players did not vote.
Were you surprised that 400 didn't vote?
Yeah.
And why was that?
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised, but I think again, on surface analysis, I'm surprised. But after you analyze it and stop and think about it, you know, they were probably guided to not make that decision, because right now a lot of things are coming to a halt. A lot of things are not progressing the way they typically are. So I think they're just being, again, more analytical, more judicious. And I think there are a lot of those 400 players were guided by their agents to take that stance of not voting.
Right now, the biggest news that has came out is Tom Brady, you know, coming out saying, hey, you know what, I'm not going to sign back with New England. I got a two-part question. My first question to you, Doc, is, you know, what do you perceive when you hear, you know, Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft say, you know what, Tom Brady's played for us for the last 20 years. He's earned the right to basically see what is out there. So that's my first part question. Is this a situation where you think that all three sides kind of had enough with each other, or what is your opinion on that? And, you know, since this news has came out, a lot of people are saying, hey, you know what, it's looking like Tom Brady to the Chargers. And then you have a smaller group saying, well, he wouldn't come to the Chargers and have to play Patrick Mahomes twice a year. What are your thoughts on that? Because I don't think Tom Brady cares if he has to play Patrick Mahomes twice a year.
Yeah, well, first off, the first question is, the emotionality and the psychological impact of playing for one team for 20 years, winning multiple Super Bowls, having tremendous success in one organization like that, would build a lot of social cohesion. Like, those people are together, they're close. But you know what? I mean, in the NFL, as you know, Orlando, you know, the NFL stands for not for long. Things can change in a hurry. I have been in meetings where GMs and executive vice presidents will look people in the eye and say, you're part of the future of this organization, and within days fire that person. So, you know, we're talking about a not for long organization. What have you done for me lately? And I think, you know, as I heard you say earlier, Sandy, you know, at some point they got to evaluate Tom Brady on a value basis. You know, how much value does he bring to this organization? Regardless of the past, regardless of all the championships, regardless of how well we know his family, his family knows our families, at some point he is a commodity, and his value, what is his value to this organization as a football player? And they separate everything else. The other thing is, again, there's a phenomenon. Where's he going? Where's he going to play? You know, I think, again, Sandy, I think you said it really well. I mean, by NFL standards, he's probably an average quarterback, and I would even say maybe a little bit below average physically. And from the neck up, he's always going to be good.
Just as Manning was always good at that.
Yeah, and you know, he's going to bring a certain element. Like, if he goes to a team and there's some young blood in there at the quarterback position, he can be a great tutor for those people, helping them understand what he has done from the neck up. I mean, he's always going to be one of the best there ever was from the neck up, but from the neck down, he's in my opinion, below average. So I don't think he's going to hold that much value out there, other than to bring him in and be a locker room guy and be an emotional and mental and psychological leader in that organization.
We'll come back and we'll talk for a few more minutes with Dr. Rick Perea and drill down on the National Football League. Free agency going on right now. No delays, apparently, in the start of the league season, should there be. What to do with the NFL draft coming up next month. All of that ahead with Dr. Rick Perea in studio. Sandy Clough, Orlando Franklin, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
This segment on 104.3 The Fan is brought to you by SCL Mortgage.
Denver Sports Snapshot.
The NFL free agency period officially gets underway tomorrow at 2 p.m. Stay tuned to The Fan for all the latest on the Broncos.
Snapshot presented by Schomp BMW. One price, one person, 1 hour.
Dr. Referee is with us, and I do want to get clarification from you. One, you aren't saying ignore what the World Health Organization is referring to here, and you're not saying don't listen to health experts. In fact, you're saying just the opposite.
Correct. Yeah, I'm just saying be judicious, be analytical of the sources you're using. The Centers for Disease Control is a very reliable source. That's one. There's others. But I'm just saying be analytical, because I see so many people just react and not think through things, Sandy, and that's very common in our society. So that's just my number one thing, is be analytical, be critical thinking.
You find Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has spoken a great deal, to be part of that expertise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Advice we should be adherent to.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think he is a credible source, a board-certified MD, absolutely. Yeah. But again, what I'm talking about is how you, what you do with that information.
Yes.
Be analytical, be judicious, just don't accept it carte blanche.
Doc, I got to ask you about this Cam Newton situation, because earlier today, right as we came on, the Panthers had announced that they had given Cam Newton permission to seek a trade. And about 5 minutes ago, Cam set the record straight with his tweet back at what they just tweeted out. And he said, stop with the wordplay. I never asked for it. There is no dodging this one. I love the Panthers to death and will always love you guys. Please do not try and play me or manipulate the narrative and act like I wanted this. You forced me into this. And then he has a love and with an emoji, like a peace sign emoji. But what do you make of this?
Yeah, I make of it, there's a lot of psychology behind this. You know, you just don't know the source. There's always three sides to every story, that one side, the other side, somewhere in between. So there's probably some middle ground between this. But I think that, you know, it'd be better if these two parties could get together and talk behind the scene and really agree upon what the motives are. What is my motive for staying here? What is your motive for me having me here or moving? And just be honest and open with each other. But yeah, there's definitely something going on behind the scenes that people are not on the same page. And I think Cam Newton is obviously from the neck down is one of the most talented athletes I've ever seen in modern day football. But from the neck up, I mean, I think Cam has a little ways to go, and maybe whatever organization he ends up with, that would be a focal point for his development going forward.
What are some of the do's and don'ts?
Yes. Yeah, you know, Sandy, in this unprecedented time, there's a couple things I'd like people to think about. And number one is recognize you can't control everything. When you think you can control everything, it really sets an expectation of really outcome. And I don't want people to think about outcome. I want them to think about process. What do you do today? What do you do in the next 3 hours to really regulate your anxiety? One of those things is limit your alcohol and caffeine intake. A lot of people will, you know, resort to maybe drinking alcohol at home, maybe drinking caffeine. And I'm not saying don't use it, but be regulated if you do. Drink more water. Eat well-balanced meals. I mean, it sounds obvious, but a lot of people, you know, may not eat as balanced of a diet now, and that's something that I definitely want them to do. Get enough sleep. That's another thing. Don't stay up all night watching movies. Get enough sleep. Exercise. As we mentioned before, you can go outside, go to the park, take a walk. There's some groups out there, if you look on the internet, that are getting together in parks and exercising, so you can definitely, you know, exercise that central nervous system, that autonomic nervous system. Take deep breaths. We call these diaphragmatic breaths, Sandy, and that means breathe through the diaphragm. When you breathe through the abdominal diaphragm, the brain gets 30% more oxygen. When it gets 30% more oxygen, it puts you on the parasympathetic side, which is the calm side of the nervous system. Take time out. Listen to music. Meditate. You know, music is great. It stimulates the brain chemistry. Do some meditation, some yoga. Techniques that are really going to help you relax. And then talk to each other. Communication is key. You know, when we tend to confine ourselves, we tend not to talk.
Talk to friends.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Talk to friends. You know, maybe you haven't had the time. I put had the time in quotations. Maybe you have not had the time or made the time to talk to that favorite cousin, to talk to that favorite auntie, to talk to that favorite friend that's across the country. Talk to people. Reunite with people. Communication is great for the brain. You know, oxytocin's released in the brain, Orlando. We call that the love drug, man. It connects us to people. Let that oxytocin flow, man. Communicate with each other. Love each other. But just do things in moderation. And get outside a little bit. That's all I'm going to tell you, people. Get outside. Take a walk. You know, walk through the park. Look at the trees. It'll really stimulate brain chemistry in a very positive way.
Doc, I want to ask you about Josh Gordon. You know, he's had a trouble pass in the NFL, and now with this new CBA, the NFL has came out and said, hey, we're not going to no longer going to suspend guys for testing positive with marijuana.
Right.
I know the Broncos have a need at the wide receiver position. We got a clear-cut number one, but you got a bunch of other guys that might be threes and fours or maybe even fives on other teams. With the CBA now changing, do you think that guys like Josh Gordon get a clean slate, and do you think that some – a team like the Broncos should actually really try to go make a push for him?
I do. I think, you know, I know a little bit about Jay because I was in Cleveland when he was there for a little bit. And I'll tell you what, when the kid is regulating himself, when he's thinking clearly, he's a unique talent. Not just the neck down, but the neck up. Very creative, very innovative in his communication styles. I think it's that, Orlando, this has changed the climate and culture of the NFL, that no longer, you know, are you going to be testing positive, but this is more of the norm. And so for the players that we used to think of on the fringe, like, you know, he smokes weed, we don't want him on our organization, you have to now consider, you know, the medicinal benefits of marijuana. So I think it changes the climate and culture for a player like a JG, because Jay is a great player when he's operating on that, what I call that parasympathetic calm side of his nervous system. When he's on the other side sympathetic, he can be a chemistry buster on your team. So I want people to understand that the climate and culture is changing as we speak about how we view players using marijuana going forward.
Before I let you run, on the RamosLaw.com text line from Dave, ask the doctor about the Facebook post I read. Several days without sports, I found a woman on my couch. Apparently, she's my wife. She seems nice.
I love that, Dave. That's great. No, that, you know, again, this gives us an opportunity to connect with each other, Sandy, that we didn't have before. And I'll put it in quotations. I haven't had time. I haven't made time. Now you can put that aside. That's no longer an excuse. Connect with people. Communicate with people. Again, brain chemistry is really what regulates human behavior. And so, again, stimulate that brain in all the ways I talked about. But more than anything, Sandy, connect with it. With one another. Man, we thrive. We thrive on love. We thrive on appreciation from others. And this is a great time to really connect with others.
So don't just sit at home and watch TV all day.
No.
Have conversations.
No, have conversations. And again, make it a goal of yours to reunite. Reunite with two or three people that you've been thinking about. You got the time now. So go back and get that brain chemistry, get that oxytocin flowing, and love one another.
And a lot of the meetings that people have, there are ways now. We have the technology to meet electronically.
Yes. And you know, Sandy,
and
this...
don't ignore that.
Right.
Do that even if you're as technologically inept as somebody like I am.
Yeah. You know, one NFL GM told me, he says, Doc, we pay you to think forward. And I'm going to think forward when I say this. This experience may give us evidence that we don't need to be in close proximity with each other as much as we thought by going to buildings. You know, I have a friend that owns a lot of buildings here in the Denver area, and he's scared to death because he's saying, you know what, this may prove to people that we can do things more remotely instead of going to office buildings to do our work. So this is going to be an interesting experience in terms of industry and organizations and how they conduct business going forward.
Always good to see you. Thanks.
Love you guys, man. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it, and we will continue.